Let's call the meeting to order. This is the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. Let the record reflect that it's 1:35 on Tuesday, March 15th. Present are Representative Ledoux, my vice chair, Representative Sponholz, Representative Tuck. Representative Hughes is in transportation but expected to join us. And Representative Culver and Lynn are both excused. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Thanks to Martha, our recording secretary, and Christy, our session moderator. If you could, silence your cell phones. And joining us is Representative Hughes. Good afternoon. Today we're going to hear two pieces of legislation. It's my intent to take public testimony, have committee discussion. I am expecting some suggestions on amendments, and then we'll work on those amendments after this meeting and bring it back for a committee debate in the near future. So let's, first off, ladies are always first, so let's have Kendra come forward, introduce herself, and talk about HCR 25. Following her, my staff, Rob Earl, will introduce HCR 30 after that. And then when we get to public testimony, you can do testimony on either piece of legislation, or you can combine your testimony. Because post-traumatic stress injury is a very important issue to this state and to society as a whole. So, Kendra, if you could put yourself on the record, please.
Sure. Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Chris Tuck. And, Chris, did you want to say anything, or you want me to just go ahead?
How about you do it?
Okay.
You're the heavy lifting on this one.
Sounds good. So HCR 25, which is in front of you, will establish June 27, 2016 as Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day. And in addition, it will also encourage the terminology change from post-traumatic stress disorder to injury. Throughout this process, I've been working with some individuals at a nonprofit organization, which is called Honor for All. Their goal is to have this passed in 50 states. It's already passed in the U.S. House of Representatives and the Senate. Right now, there are 8 states that have passed a resolution similar to this, and there are 23 states with commitments to Honor for All who are also on the line that will be speaking with you today. The word disorder, it frequently portrays kind of a negative image, so this is why we're looking at changing the terminology to an injury to really reflect on what this is. With the disorder terminology, where there's been a lot of expressed just kind of frustration with this because it has a stigma associated with it. So really it is an injury. It's something that you can get from whether you're serving overseas and you see a number of things that are happening there. It actually happens with children if they go through a traumatic incident as well. A few just kind of facts I wanted to point out. So 260 million people do suffer from PTSI. That's a worldwide. In the U.S., about 3.5% of adults are being diagnosed with PTSI on any given year. And the incidence of military-related PTSI is on the rise. However, that is partly due because of increased awareness and better detection. Although right now the Veterans Administrations have come out and said that really we're only reaching about 20%. So this is really the big push on establishing a day so we can bring this to everyone's awareness and educate on where you can go to get services and also detecting the signs of it. So this is, while it is a day, it is something that we want to make sure that we are getting out to the public, letting them know these are the signs that you can look for, these are the places that you can go. And so this is really the big push on making sure that we can connect individuals with services that they need. And I'll leave it at that, and you know, if you have any questions.
Before we go to questions for Kendra, sponsor of this resolution, you wish to put something on the record?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think there's hardly a family out there that does not have a member that's been affected by post-traumatic stress injury. My brother served in the Navy. He was during the Gulf War. He was a photographer. He had to document a lot of things that classified, but as well that you hope that nobody ever sees those type of images. And he does suffer from that today. And I'll tell you that he was born a normal child, raised up normally along with me. And to say that this is a disorder, I think, is really doing a disservice to great men and women who have served our country and great men and women who have seen things in their lives outside of the military that also have been affected by this. When you look at the numbers of people that that still need treatment and really need to come forward, having an awareness day is the first step in letting people know on both sides, those that have experienced it and those that haven't experienced it, on what the issue is, as well as connecting people with services and connecting people with help. And we even now are hearing about adverse childhood experiences and how that affects somebody's upbringing. And so I think it's just outside the military and within the military, this is something that needs to be corrected. We do need to have a day of awareness. I'm very proud that this legislature has passed brain injury awareness days in the past as well. This is just one of those things to bring awareness to this situation so that we can let the healing begin. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Minority Leader. Is there questions for the sponsor and or Kendra? Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward. Just wondering if there's anything significant about the date, June 27th. Is that a date that other states around the country, and is there anything particular in the month of June, or why June 27th? And would it I guess it would stay that. Okay, so this is a one-year thing, so we're not talking about having a day every year also. As I'm seeing, it says June 27th, 2016, so talk about the day.
Representative Hughes, through the chair, June 27th was a day that was picked and has been passed by those numerous states that I mentioned, the eight states that have passed that. I can give you a list if you'd like. And it was also passed by the Senate and the U.S. House as the day that they picked. I'm going to let Kent Hall, who's the Vice President of Honor for All, get into more details on that. Who's on the line will be ready to testify next. And, yes, this is for the 27th. We set it up as a resolution that way, and I guess so we could do one, a resolution each year to have June 27th established for every year, or should we decide later on in the future to make it standard, we can put in a bill to do that. But this year we've been doing resolutions across the states.
Okay.
Representative Hughes.
And I have, thank you for that clarification. I have a separate question, so it's not follow-up, Mr. Chair. Just wondering what kind of activities you might envision as far as, you know, we set aside the day. What kind of things would be reach-out efforts that you envision that maybe the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs might be doing? Has there been any discussion what might occur on June 27, 2016, besides just a mention in a news brief that this is the day?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, I will also refer that question over to Bob Dole, who is Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And he's going to have some comments online. We do have a support letter, too, from Commissioner Lori Hummel, and we look forward to working with them and seeing what kind of things that we can do during that time to start bringing in awareness. I know that they have a plan that they do reach out to our veterans now, and I hope that we can work with them and do a number of events to start bringing awareness. But I would like Deputy Commissioner Dole to elaborate on that and what we can do with DMVA.
Okay. Any other? Representative Ledoux.
I've got a couple of questions. Do we know right now, and this is either for Kendra or Representative Tuck, do we know how many Alaskans currently suffer from PTSI?
I go for it.
Representative Ledoux through the chair. I know we're looking at establishing what that number is, and I'm going to refer to Bob Dole, who's going to be coming up. Like I said, he's online waiting and can talk about some of the specifics there on the numbers that DMVA currently has, and they've been doing a number of reach-out efforts on that. So I would like him to speak on that part.
Thank you. Could we ask Bob Dole to answer that question now?
I thought we'd just get for this questions for the sponsor and his representative, and then we'll ask him.
All right. Could I ask another question then?
Please, go ahead.
Okay. Do you know what type of services are currently provided to those that suffer from PTSI?
Sorry. Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there are a number of different services that you can access through the Veterans Health Administration, and DMVA does help in putting people in contact with those services that you can get, whether they're counseling services. And then also when veterans are or service members are coming out during their debrief, and I know that they're when you go through the Veterans Health Veterans Health Service, they do have some mandatory testing to establish to find out if you have PTSI, and then they connect you with services. So when you're getting into that, and then so for the outreach services, as mentioned, I know Bob is on the line, and he'll get into more details on specifically what they do. But I have attended multiple meetings at the veterans, for in your district, and they've talked about the number of services that they have there, the screening services for the veterans, and also therapeutic services that you can go through and have access to.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Kendra? Seeing none, thank you. And at this time, I'd like to bring up Rob Earle, who will have the opening for House Joint Resolution 30, and then we'll have both resolutions in front of us when we ask for testimony. And we do have two gentlemen from the Office of Veterans Affairs in Anchorage that are available for questions as well. So, Rob, put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earle, staff to Chair Herron. The previous testimony covered a lot of things that there's overlap on here, so I will try to not duplicate. I did want to say something on the number of Alaskans suffering from PTSI. I don't think that number's been established, but just given the large number of veterans in Alaska and the high rates of child abuse, domestic and sexual violence, it's certainly in the thousands, and perhaps we'll hear more on that later. Regarding the term post-traumatic stress disorder, the word disorder carries a stigma, and many who suffer from PTSD consider the word degrading because it makes it sound like the condition is untreatable, and in fact, it is a treatable injury. Also, historically, post-traumatic stress disorder has been viewed as a mental illness caused by a pre-existing flaw in a person's brain or character, and changing the term to injury will make it clear that this is not accurate. Furthermore, the stigma of the word dishonor or disorder discourages some of those afflicted from seeking medical treatment, and timely treatment is very beneficial to curing cases of PTSD, especially critical given the number of suicides associated with this condition. As you can see at the bottom of the sponsor statement or the end of the resolution, there's HGR 30 specifically resolves three things that the legislature should do. The legislature believes that the term post-traumatic stress disorder should be universally changed to post-traumatic stress injury. The legislature urges the American Psychiatric Association to consider changing PTSD to PTSI for the next revision of the DSM. That's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And the legislature urges the governor to support the usage of the term post-traumatic stress injury. Lastly, I guess I just point out that there's a letter of support from the group previously mentioned, Honor for All, and also a letter of support from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And there are also two zero fiscal notes.
Thank you. I'd like to make comment as a reason that I have introduced this resolution is because I know people that do have post-traumatic stress, not only just because they're in the military, but other acts that have happened to them, and events as well. I'll use one that's close to home here for myself personally is in 1997 there was a murder at the Bethel High School. A principal and a student were shot and killed, and there were many people that, of course, were right there had suffered post-traumatic stress, and so it may have not physically harmed them, but it did harm them, and that's why I support the change to an injury. What was also interesting to learn is that Socrates had post-traumatic stress. Of course, they didn't know what it was, but it was when he was a young man. He was in combat as well. And then move forward as Shakespeare, one of his writings was Macbeth, and that was in part a story about a young man who had post-traumatic stress when he was in the military as well. And so it's been around for forever, and as you can see in the whereases, society has dealt with it in many ways, but I think the issue that really hits home is that any one of us may have had an event that caused post-traumatic stress, and to say that you have that stress because, like Rob said, is that you're somehow weak in character or you have something that's inside of you that you were born with. And that may be true in some cases, but to continue the label of disorder is a disservice, like the minority leader said. It is a disservice to that individual, to that family, to that community, to society as a whole. And I think that this effort to get the association to change that label to injury may be difficult, and it may take quite a while. But I think the awareness of both of these resolutions is very important. So there's any questions from committee to either Rob or myself? Yes, Representative Hughes.
Yes, I was wondering, and I know we had the earlier one where we used the word injury in the day, but I'm wondering, have other states passed similar things to change the word from disorder to injury, or are we the first one doing that?
Well, Alaska is not the first. There have been other days, and we'll ask the experts here that will be testifying, is if indeed Alaska is the first, or have there been others that have want to be officially the label to be officially changed? We'll find out. Yes, Representative Hughes.
And then another question, is the term with the word disorder in our statutes anywhere where that will need to be updated? That would take a bill rather than a resolution. Just wondering if we know that.
Well, I think that Rob and Kendrick and people that are going to testify could probably answer that. But this journey is going to take a long time. And of course, in the Department of Health and Social Services, disorder is everywhere in treatment, in regulations, and so this is going to be a long journey. And hopefully, society will be successful in doing that, in recognizing that an individual was injured; it wasn't because of some quirk that they were born with.
And yes, just as a follow-up, just to make the comment, I think it is incredibly important that it be done because it's related to an event rather than a condition that, like you said, you could be born with or that could be caused by ongoing environmental situations. But it's a disorder does not imply that it's tied to an event, and injury does. And so for that reason, I think it's the right language.
And I appreciate that, Representative Ledoux.
So, personally, I look at the term post-traumatic stress disorder, and to me, that does tie it to an event. To trauma, I mean. And I look at the term disorder, and I guess I don't see a pejorative or a condescending or anything bad with the term disorder. But nevertheless, if the people who are suffering from that disorder or injury, if they would prefer that it be called an injury rather than a disorder, I always want to call people, you know, and say what they would like it to be termed at. But I guess I'm wondering, in the psychiatric world, do we have any psychiatrists, maybe somebody from the American Psychiatric Association, to teach us or to tell us or to testify about what the difference might be between a disorder and an injury, whether that has any meaning in psychiatric terms? Because I'm always a little bit reticent about politicians substituting their judgment when it comes to a diagnosis for the people who are actually diagnosing something.
Thank you, Representative Wild. And we hope to have that put on the record. Again, this is going to be a very long journey, and there's even most recently, it's very clear that there are people that do not want it to be changed, but there's just as passionate people that want it to be changed, because it's to me, this is my opinion, it's more accurate, it does justice to the condition, and those that are affected, the ones that have to contend with, have a tendency to prefer it. But that's just opinions. Representative Spanholz.
Yeah. Representative Herron, thank you. I'm very excited to see this coming forward. I actually adopted a child who suffers from post-traumatic stress injury, and I think that especially in light of the fact that many of our military veterans that are coming back with a post-traumatic stress injury express concern about the term disorder. While I appreciate the comments about wanting to check in with the psychiatric world, and I think that is a very important thing to do, I think that positioning this as an injury and something that is treatable, recoverable, is very positive. And it's also very in line with what we've come to know recently about brain development and the brain in the way that it changes. We used to believe that brains were sort of what you were born with was what you got, and if any injury happened along the way, you couldn't remedy it. And what we've learned in brain science over the last 15, maybe even 20 years now, is that the brain is a growing, changing part of our bodies, just like anything else is, and that while you may experience injury, you can also recover from injury, even in the brain. And I personally have seen this in my own daughter's instance, and know of many veterans who have experienced this as well. By approaching it with a positive, you know, a positive perspective, and seeking treatment and doing the work that needs to be done, recovery can be found. And so I think this is a very exciting move, and I'm looking forward to supporting it.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just quickly looked up disorder, and simple definition, there's three definitions, but the one that applies to what we're talking about is an abnormal physical or mental condition. And the examples that they use is someone having a liver disorder as far as an abnormal physical condition, and then a mental condition is some sort of personality disorder. And I think that when we look at this, I think that definition looks like something that's beyond people's, something that they're born with, basically, an abnormal physical or mental condition. And sure, an injury can make someone abnormal physically, but I don't think people recognize it as being that way. They recognize it as an injury if something like that were to occur. But I appreciate the comments that were made, because it made me think about it a little bit further and looking into that. And a label does have impact. And when we look at an injury, and I like that perspective also that was brought up about it, is an event that happened. It's also something that happens to someone versus something that they just just occurred, or did something that they were born with. So, yeah, this is a good discussion. I think that more of this discussion and more of this is going to happen if we were to pass these resolutions, that people will have more of that dialogue and just think a little bit further about really what post-traumatic stress is. And it's something that just doesn't happen. It's something as a result of an event.
So one final comment before we go to people that are standing by to testify is that last summer I had the very distinct honor, because of chairing this committee, is I was one of the speakers at the Chris Kyle Hospital ribbon cutting and grand opening. And, of course, Chris Kyle's widow was the keynote speaker. And in talking to Dr. Mayo here recently, he came down, is that, you know, Alaskans that are able to go to this hospital they've seen remarkable success. And so though the label, whether you're against it or for it, it really is about the awarenesses that we need to keep on striving for. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go, Representative.
Yeah, and I know we don't have, thank you, Mr. Chair, I know we don't have a psychiatrist available, but just so I don't, in case I forget or I'm not at a future meeting, I would really like to know from a psychiatrist's perspective whether they consider a disorder something that is ongoing and that you manage rather than that you recover from, because I think that's an important distinction. And I really appreciate Representative Ledoux's comments, because I think it's important to get their perspective, and if the word were to be changed, how it might, if it would impact any of how they might approach it. I don't think that it would, the word, but I think for the public it might change how we approach it, as far as Representative Tuck said, the label. But I would like to know how they define a disorder, and because my limited knowledge is that disorders are something you have to figure out how to cope with for your whole life, and our hope, I think, is that people will actually heal in as many cases as possible from post-traumatic stress. Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll go to the people who have been waiting online. And for everybody that's listening in, I wanted to have this committee discussion. Usually the committee discussion is after people testify, but I wanted the discussion to be before we listen to your testimony. And so if you can answer any question or want to make comment on what we talked about, I'd appreciate that. So, yes, Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I would just like to make a comment in response to Representative Hughes's comment, that if you take the attitude, or you embody in a legality, that post-traumatic stress is something that you should recover from, what implications might that be for insurance, workers' compensation, particularly if you're legally saying, okay, it's an injury, and you're going to recover from this injury. Well, maybe somebody has been injured horrifically on the job. Workers' compensation is not overly generous, in my estimation, when it comes to certain types of treatment. And so we might just want to take that into consideration.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. So let's go.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. We'll get there sometime. So.
Just real quick, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. And I just wanted to say there's some injuries that people just don't fully recover from. Loss of a limb being an example. We also had a suicide that happened outside the state capitol. And there was some staff that was there when it happened. And fortunately, we were able to get them services. But I agree. I mean, what do we have to do for workman's compensation and that kind of stuff? You know, in this situation, we do have a great plan where people were able to get services, and Legislative Affairs was very quick about making those available and to those that were affected. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, let's go to online. And, again, anything that you heard when I call upon you, please include that in your testimony. So let's go to the great state of Michigan. And Kent Hall, are you online?
Hello. I hope you can all hear me.
Yes. Please put yourself on the record and any affiliation, and then begin your testimony, please.
Sure. My name is Kent Hall, K-E-N-T-H-A-L-L. I'm affiliated with Honor for All. I've been sitting here biting my tongue wanting to answer so many of these questions. I've been dealing with this for a long time now. First of all, let me thank you for all these comments before and for the opportunity to speak briefly about post-traumatic stress. I am a Vietnam combat veteran. I left Vietnam in 1969. Unfortunately, Vietnam never left me. And even today, I still have occasional flashbacks. I've been diagnosed by the VA having PTSD. In 2010, I saw a video by a renowned psychiatrist, Dr. Frank Ochberg, who is just a fountain of information for all of you on the psychiatric position on this. He's the medical director for Honor for All. He described PTSD in a video as a wound, not a weakness. Now, as simple as that might sound, for me, that was a huge aha moment when I quit blaming myself and started looking to resolve the problem. In January 2011, I became a part of Honor for All and went from total silence to becoming a public speaker. 2011, I went to Lexington, Kentucky. The next day, I was in West Virginia. The next day, Virginia, on to Maryland, finally in Washington, D.C. And this was the first national PTSD awareness rally. In 2012 and 2013, Honor for All sponsored that same event in Washington, D.C. In 2014, we were in my home state of Michigan on the steps of the Capitol in Lansing, where we became the first state to change the name from PTSD disorder to PTSI injury. In 2015, we had another event, and we had 22 pair of empty combat boots lining the Capitol steps for a visual to signify the 22 veterans from all wars lost to suicide each day. That same year, Indiana became the second state to pass PTSI Awareness Day. I continue to speak at Kiwanis, Rotary, Eagle, Lions, anyone that'll listen. In January of this year, at our annual meeting for Honor for All, they made me their vice president. We are a national not-for-profit based here in Michigan. Last year, following states passed resolutions recognizing post-traumatic stress, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Maine, and Pennsylvania. This year, we added Arkansas, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Virginia, Wisconsin, and soon Alaska. I also found out we just added New Jersey today. I'm sure you'd like to hear about some study to see how simple word change might help reduce the stigma. I can talk primarily from a personal perspective of a veteran, now 70 years old, dealing with PTSD, PTSI, and the positive changes in my life since I've received help from the VA. I'm also part of a Vietnam Veterans Group Therapy sponsored by the VA with a psychologist leader. There are 12 of us in this group, and we meet every 2 weeks. There are three other such groups, all in Lansing, and we have had three joint sessions with over 40 veterans, with Dr. Frank Ochberg leading the meeting. And the last two, we had our spouses included. It comes down to common sense and that strong, proud soldier, and that a strong, proud soldier does not want to be mentally disordered. We resist help by our very nature. but we know if we have an injury, it's okay to seek help. Dr. Ochberg was part of the committee with Dr. Friedman and others to define PTSD back in 1980. Dr. Ochberg would tell you that if he had any idea the word disorder would be part of the stigma that might stop veterans from reaching out for help, he never would have gone along with it. But he has learned with an open mind and is a proponent of this change to PTSI. The difference in the diagnosis of PTSD and PTSI is zero. There is no difference. The benefits would not change for veterans, but if we can help just a few stay away from the suicide issue and other issues, it's going to be worth it. I believe through my personal contact with now hundreds of veterans and family members that this just makes sense. That's the comment I get from them most of the time. I just did want to say that the 27th of June has to do with a Sergeant Joe Beal who committed suicide in front of his, platoon, but June 27th was his birthday. Kent Conrad, a senator out of North Dakota, is the one that started the PTSD awareness, and now it's coming into PTSI. Thank you for your time, your understanding. Your support and prayers are very much appreciated. If I can answer any questions, I'll be glad to try.
Is there questions of Mr. Hall? So, Mr. Hall, in doing my research, and of course, I'm a Marine Corps veteran myself.
Thank you.
But is it so deeply ingrained in society that, and I'll use the example, the movie Patton, where the general slapped a private because it was termed battle fatigue in those days. Is it so ingrained in a lot of people that it's difficult for them to accept this change?
Yes. And in fact, one of the proponents of this is Dr. Friedman that worked with Dr. Ochberg. Two renowned psychiatrists, and one is resistant to change. And I really don't know why. I've never talked to him personally, although I'd like to. I will also say in the future, Dr. Ochberg would have been here today, but he had other commitments, so they sent me as the backup. He is just a tremendous speaker, and he makes so much sense, and he speaks to us, not down to us. So in the future, his last name, Ochberg, O-C-H-B-E-R-G, first name Frank.
Yes,
you can look him up on the internet. His bio is just, it's amazing.
Yes,
and I feel pretty lucky to have him as a friend.
Yes, Mr. Hall, my office has just recently come across his bio, and I was going to give it to the committee as well. And could you ask the doctor that since he wasn't available today, that we could schedule our second hearing and that ask him if he would be willing to testify at the second hearing?
Oh, certainly.
Okay, we'll get in contact with him, and we'll set that, arrange that. Just FYI, I mentioned it earlier, is myself and the minority leader who has the concurrent resolution, we're going to suggest to the full committee that we combine these resolutions so it's stronger and it'll give us a better chance of getting it through the process this year. So is there any other questions for Mr. Hall from committee members? Seeing none. Thank you very much, sir. Okay, let's go down the list. Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, are you on the line, sir?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, please state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good afternoon. I am Colonel Retired Bob Dole, Deputy Commissioner of the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. First, I'd like to thank Kent Hall for his service, both in Vietnam and out of uniform today on this important issue. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, General Hummel, and I strongly support both of these legislative measures. DMVA strongly supports this legislation to better address a condition that affects at least 30% of our 57,000 combat service veterans in Alaska, in addition to those still in uniform. In terms of the questions for numbers, I can talk about veterans and service members. I will defer to DHSS if they're able to get a broader sampling of those who have been victims of crime or sexual abuse or child abuse and further. But just looking at the military, the uniform component, 30% of 57,000 is about 18,000 veterans who are suffering the effects of PTSD. If we look at the tens of thousands of active duty service members in the state, it would, given how recent combat experience has been, it would be improbable that they are not experiencing similarly about a 30% occurrence rate. There's a multiplier in that, however, because PTSD is not an individual effect. It takes an event, a toll on the spouse, the children, the other family members of someone suffering from PTSD, as well as those, the friends and those that work with an individual suffering from it in the workplace. So it is not just the bare number of those having it directly. It afflicts all of society. In the military, I dealt with those struggling with this condition from starting as a medic in an infantry company at 18 years old through retiring as a vice wing commander a few decades later. I am an Afghanistan veteran as well. I've also worked with hundreds of those afflicted with PTSD, post-traumatic stress injury, while working with aviation mishap survivors while at the Department of Justice, and sexual assault survivors while at the State of Alaska Attorney General's Office. PTSI, long and short of it, takes a devastating toll and continues to do so if not treated. I've worked with those struggling with PTSI who were struggling with it for decades after the traumatic event or events that caused it. Some could not hold down a job. Many became estranged from their families. Some ultimately lost their lives to suicide. Although disorder may sound benign in a sterile academic setting of the APA or among clinicians chatting amongst themselves, I found repeatedly in talking to those suffering from this condition that it exacerbates a stigma that discourages treatment among those who must battle the condition. I know, too, that the APA uses the term disorder extensively, and it appears to be more a term for deviation from normal is their definition. However, that is not how it's received by the person who has to decide whether or not they're going to seek treatment for it. PTSI does not arise from a genetic condition, someone's personal values, decisions, a bacteria, or a virus. It's not a disorder in an individual. It's a result of an externally imposed event or events on an individual. A psychiatrist with whom I worked and who had treated hundreds of vets struggling with this condition observed, PTSD is a natural response to an unnatural situation someone has been thrust into. The only disorder that's involved is not in the individual, it's in the mechanism of injury. The time is well past to rename this condition to accurately reflect that it is caused by an external force, not any predilection of a individual. On behalf of DMVA, Brigadier General Hummel, and myself, we welcome the committee's efforts on this matter that is vital of importance to our veterans, service members, their family, and all of society. When enacted, we envision these measures such as the Awareness Day being an enabling mechanism. I just finished a meeting with a former director of the Veterans Health Administration for Alaska, Rasmussen Foundation staff, a Vet Center counselor, and some veterans service organization members. And we believe we can generate activities to generate media and social media interest around those to promote awareness of what's going on, what the alternatives are, and to encourage more to seek treatment. So we envision the Awareness Day is a springboard. In terms of the services provided, and I say this both as a veteran and also working with our Office of Veterans Affairs, through the virtually any touch with the Veterans Health Administration or the Veterans Benefit Administration, veterans are made aware of services available and are asked questions to kind of ask if they would like assistance with some of the symptoms they may be experiencing. Our staff at DMVA, as well as veteran service officers that work with us, do the same. We also have vet centers in some of the larger cities across the state. And a vet center is not part of the big VA hospital you walk into or the VA clinic. It's a smaller place you can go to just to meet with a counselor and not be, it provides a less obtrusive way to seek attention. I think in Alaska, to be honest with you, some of our best resources for veterans needing assistance with this now are the peer groups, such as the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Club, is a phenomenal training or phenomenal assistance device for many veterans. When going to the VA, though, their statistics that they publish and through those I've spoken with personally as well indicate that if you request assistance for an acute post-traumatic stress-related concern, the response time is far less than 24 hours, that they will have a qualified provider talking to you. Just an observation, in looking at the statutes out there, we have not located any statutory changes that may be necessary. We believe we do not have any regulations within DMVA that require change. We realize, though, that probably other departments have some that will require that post-traumatic stress injury will have to be defined in accordance with the APA definition of PTSD until that definition is made more friendly to the people actually suffering from the condition. That completes my opening statement. I'm available to questions from the committee.
Thanks, Bob. That last paragraph of your testimony is yet, I think both offices will want to work with you, that maybe we should craft that into the combined resolution that talks about how, since there's no statute designations and none in your department on regulations, is how we can have a caveat or a statement that recognizes what your testimony just said. So I appreciate that. Any questions for the Deputy Commissioner? Yes, Representative Ledoux.
You mentioned that PTSD affects the family and the workers and the friends of someone who has PTSI. So does it ever impact them in such a way that they actually end up with PTSI?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I am not a licensed clinician. I don't believe, in order to have PTSI, you need an injury-causing event. If the PTSI of the veteran manifested itself in spousal violence, I think you would have a second direct effect of PTSI. But my understanding from the clinicians from a few hundred depositions is they usually have different terms they diagnose in a spouse who has not had a direct mechanism of injury from living or being with someone who's suffering from PTSI. Did that make sense, Representative?
Yes. Thank you.
So, Bob, you know, your resume is well known, and you mentioned all the things that you've done. Maybe in your spare time you can become a licensed clinician. So, Bob, I guess I'd ask you to comment one more time on the perspective that I'll share with you is that recently in Congress they had the National VFW commander was in front of a hearing. And this was brought up, and the commander lashed out and basically said that he couldn't support it. But after the hearing, though, many a veteran came up to the legislators and said, "We do support it." So, how can we address this in this resolution? We should acknowledge it in this resolution. The divide where veterans, albeit maybe it's just their opinions, is they don't recognize this invisible injury.
Mr. Chairman, mental health injuries throughout history have been difficult to recognize as not being somehow a weakness of an individual or a fault of the individual suffering from them, just as other conditions such as, in some parts of society, victims of sexual assault have also been blamed for the assault, as reprehensible as that is. And I would suggest on the mental health injuries and of the PTSI nature, it is there's more education needed, not just from those suffering from this condition, but rather those suffering from those that have to the broader population to understand the injury component. Part of what's confusing, I think, about mental health injuries is only 30% of combat veterans report a PTSD versus if you take somebody who's been shot, 100% of them report a bleeding wound that generates a purple heart. And it is that kind of that unseen part that we need to continue our education efforts doing. And I think this redesignating it as an injury and awareness day goes a long way towards improving that kind of knowledge discussion that needs to happen out there.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux?
So I'm sort of curious why the controversy. I mean, as I said, I started out feeling somewhat uncomfortable about, as a political decision, telling psychiatrists what they ought to call things. But ultimately, I come down on deferring to what the folks who are suffering from it want it to be called. Why is there all this controversy? What's the rationale? I mean, so we have testimony for it. I'm wondering if you might know what the testimony might be against the change. Maybe that's an unfair question, but I'm asking it anyway.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, two parts there. As to the APA, because I have not found that spare time to become a licensed clinician yet, I cannot, I will defer to them on their position of disorder versus injury. As to the broader population, I see it, frankly, as just we're in a time of change, in a time of new recognition of a condition, and I see a lot of it as just it's difficult for some individuals to understand something they can't see and that we haven't effectively expressed to them so they can visualize it. And this is just one of those things. What we know about mental health in the brain has come a long way, just like the rest of science has developed, and we can define this with much greater precision now. No one can see an atom, but most of us believe they're out there. And similarly, with this mental health condition, we can define it with that level of clarity. But we're still in that kind of a generational change of accomplishing that. I think if you compare where we are now versus 1972, we have come light years in terms of recognizing what PTSI is and why it is caused there. But still, we're overcoming generations of individuals who never recognized it, and we haven't provided the awareness so they can visualize it and accept it.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Appreciate your testimony. Yes, Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Bob. Appreciate it. You mentioned an estimate of 18,000 veterans in the state. As an estimate of how many might have PTSI, and then you mentioned that it could be about that same 30% or more maybe of active duty military that have seen combat recently. But what would that number be of the active duty that are stationed here in Alaska? What would 30% of those that be? What would the number be?
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Hughes, the 30% we derived of the Veterans Health Administration of Alaska tells us we have 57,000 combat vets here and that they are treating 30% of those for PTSD at this point. The 30% of that active duty population would start with a number of around 30,000. Some of the younger soldiers and airmen have not been in a combat situation yet. So we do not, within the DMVA, get direct reporting of those numbers. I would, and this is a very rough estimate, though, I would be looking, again, probably for a population of about 25,000 of that total population of 30,000 who are combat vets. And that's just looking at the number of combat patches I see when I go to active duty functions. And so we'd be down around 8,000 of those active duty members who are currently stationed in Alaska, also suffering from this condition, as well as their peers and family having to deal with it.
Okay, thank you. And I have another question.
Go ahead.
I asked earlier the sponsor about what activities they might envision. I want to ask you, you mentioned social media, reaching out to make people aware just in communications, but do you envision any kind of actual events where services might be more available, or there might be some kind of a, you know, PTSI fair or something like that where people could go, anything like that? And if you do, I'm wondering too if there might be involvement not just with through the state DMVA and but also reaching out and working with the U.S. Army and Air Force located here in the state as part of that.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, we envision creating some events heavily leveraging federal Veterans Administration and federal Veterans Administration Vet Center resources to make a PTSI fair doesn't quite fit, but we will be generating the events and appropriate and an outreach thing that will be beyond a Facebook post going out there to focus on providing services to those who may not have come forward before now on with this condition. We're also talking with Veterans Service Organizations and the Rasmussen Foundation to see what other ways we can weave that in there and leverage resources far beyond those the state would have available. And doing that, because the Veterans Health Administration is a joint entity run with the Air Force, we will also be in Alaska. We will also be bringing in or inviting the active military to participate in that process. The active military many times is more willing to treat or be seen at a vet center than at a military hospital, because it removes a lot of the fear and concern about it impacting the security clearance and hence their career. But we fully envision making sure this is open, accessible, and very apparent to the active military in Alaska as well.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bob. And Bob, you said something during your testimony that really hit a nerve, and I'm going to quote you on it in future conversations, it's never the rape victim's fault that they got raped. So, I really hit a nerve, so thank you for that. Just a couple of minutes ago, Representative Lynn has joined the committee, and Representative Lynn, we have a couple more people I'm going to ask to answer some questions if they wish to, but it's the intent of the committee to hear this, take testimony, and the minority leader and I are going to bring back a CS where we combine the two resolutions. And so we'll be getting to your office.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. So we have two other people online. They are here to answer questions. So from the Office of Veterans Affairs, Forrest Powers and Jeff Slaykew. Gentlemen, did you hear any that's why I wanted the committee to discuss this prior. Did you hear anything that you could possibly answer?
Mr. Chairman, this is Forrest Powell, and I'm with the Office of Veterans Affairs. We work for the Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole. And we wanted to make sure our concern was more or less the awareness portion of it, and how it fits in for Veterans Affairs, and what will be what involvement it will require us.
Okay, so you or Jeff did not hear any comments by the committee. It more like we were just seeking questions. Is there any of those questions you could have answered?
We're both combat veterans diagnosed with PTSD, so the questions were answered adequately, we felt.
Well, thank you for your service to our country, and so I guess I'll put you on the spot. What do you think of the label disorder versus the label injury?
The label is I have no feeling on that label, sir, Mr. Chairman. I'm more concerned about the behavior and my behavior versus whether it's a disorder or an injury. The first thing when I heard injury was what's the physical, what happened physically, and then I had to stop and think about it. And of course, yes, it did make me think about it. The last 2 days, that injury came back, and so it made it very difficult to get any sleep or think about, because I'm thinking about this. And of course, it brings back a lot of things that occurred in the combat zone. So the awareness obviously is going to do the same, I believe, for me. But my concern again is more or less the behavior and how I can control that behavior and how I can get it. I've worked on it to get it. To make myself better. Jeff?
Yeah, you pretty much agree with Forrest. That's pretty much how we feel.
Okay. Any questions from committee members? Well, I appreciate you listening in on this, and as you heard, these resolutions are going to come back as a combined resolution, and we'll invite you to listen in as well. Thank you. I'll work with the minority leader, and we'll ask this Dr. Ochberg to testify at the next hearing. And also, I'd like to invite, apparently Kent Hall said that a retired General Peter Shirelli, the former Vice Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army, was wanting to testify, but he had a conflict as well, and so we'll hopefully have those two gentlemen in front of the committee at that time. And so there's anything else? We'll get to everybody's schedules and figure out what's a good time, Tuesday or Thursday. Representative Ledoux.
I would actually like a representative of the Alaska or the American Psychiatric Association. I want to see what the rationale is for not doing this, what their rationale is.
Representative Ledoux, the revision was, the fifth revision was 3 years ago, I believe, and so they revisited every 5-6 years, and so there may be already we'll find somebody that can represent them as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other questions or comments, we did it in a little over an hour, so we're adjourned at 2:37.